stop on street corners in our communities and visit towns and demand U.S. Army out of Libya, U.S. police out of the African community. I think we should do that. To stand up. We don't take many people to do that. Stand up in our community. Stand up. U.S. military, U.S. Army out of Libya. And if you want to say Philadelphia police out of the African community. And just do that. And let people make the connection. They will make the connection. I think we have a responsibility, you know, our own. I think we have a double responsibility because Barack Hussein Obama is being used to give the impression of our cooperation with imperialism. We gotta let the world know this Negro ain't got nothing to do with us. He is not us. He is not one of us. He is not the people. He is the enemy. So, thank you so much for your time.
And resistance.
Africa Live. Africa Live. Africa Live. Africa Live. Africa Live.
Welcome to Africa Live. You're listening to Africa Live here on thehooradio.com. I'm your host, Nyabinga Zimbabwe, and we've got a great show lined up for you today. We want to do a couple things. We're going to talk a little later on about the the anniversary of the assassination of Martin Luther King is on tomorrow. We're going to talk briefly about that and why the U.S. government assassinated him. We'll also be commemorating the assassination of Little Bobby Hutton, who was a member of the Black Panther Party for Self-Defense and was assassinated on the 7th of April. But before we do that, we're going to talk a bit about what's happening in Africa. And we have the pleasure of having in the studio with us Louise Kinshasa, the Secretary General of the African Socialist International. Uhuru, Louise.
Yes, welcome. It's very nice. We honor once again to be in the studio.
Uhuru. And we want to, like I said, we want to talk about what's happening in Africa. And we see, first of all, we want to talk about the situation in Libya with the continuing attack on the people of Libya by imperialism led by the Obama regime in the U.S. And but before we get into Libya, I'd like to talk about situation in Burkina Faso, where there is unrest happening right now. Can you tell our listeners how, first of all, how this unrest kicked off in Burkina Faso, and what is the basis for
it? Yes, well, what is clear is that the president of Burkina Faso, Blaise Compaoré, we know him better as the one who assassinated the well-loved anti-imperialist leader that emerged in Burkina Faso, that even named that country Burkina Faso because the French used to call it Upper Volta. But I'm talking here of Thomas Sankara. That's the country we're talking about today. just a couple of months ago, he won the election in a way that most Africans understand he did not win the elections because he said he got 87%. And we know in Africa today, someone who has been presiding over the country against the will of the people, against the aspirations of the people, cannot get 87%. Even if he was the only candidate, he can't get that. You know, so this has provided a lot of basis for the upheaval that's taking place there. We also recognize the assassination of Thomas Sankara himself is the basis of the upheaval that's taking place in Burkina Faso, because Thomas Sankara is still remembered by many as the really man of the people, as the real leader that stood up for the people and had a program to satisfy the needs of the people. But the images of unrest that shook this country in West Africa was the assassination of a young brother who was only 24 years old, a student, in the name of Justin Zongo. He was beaten up by the police after the demonstration of the student. And, you know, that's how he was killed. And the youth, the students, mobilized. As you only know, a lot of people have been inspired by also what's going on in North Africa. People definitely believe it's not a time to sit down and get beaten up by the police. Mm. It's time to fight back, get organized and mobilized. And the youth responded, you know, now raced throughout the high schools, throughout universities, in the communities, just the people demonstrated, you know, asking for justice. You know, they want justice. And that forced the government to close down even the university for at least a week, for the 14th, from the 14th of March to the 26th of March, I think it was, yeah. So that's at the beginning of it.
Hmm. I understand that that it's something that's kind of been contagious there. You know, like I understand that soldiers ended up joining into the unrest and even judges as well. Can you say something about that?
Yeah. You know, that's very interesting because what happened is that the soldiers, as you know, the soldiers in Africa are above the bourgeois law that's in place. If the soldiers do something to anybody, they don't go to court. If they go to court, they acquit it, you know, because they are the law into themselves. So some of the soldiers from what they call the 32 battalion, commanders of the 32 infantry regiment, some of them raped underage African girl. Mm. And they this case was taken to court, and one of the soldiers was arrested. And the soldiers responded by firing a rocket against the Department of Justice. You know, the Justice Department? Yeah, they fired a rocket against the Justice Department in that country. And I think the minister, Denise Barry, was inside. People say even she was molested. I don't know how, but, you know, that's one thing. The soldiers, the commanders, basically, they also went to the house of or the headquarters of the chief of staff of the Burkina Faso Army, General Jendere. You know, they also brutalized him. Hmm. You know, so you can see the soldiers were really on a rampage, and the soldiers also went to the courts. You know, which is another branch of the so-called Justice Department. And they ransacked the place, terrorized the other judges, you know. So you can see these are soldiers, you know, who are used to brutalize the people for years, because you have to understand that Burkina Faso army has played a role in destabilizing some of the places in West Africa. So, for example, Burkina Faso army played a role, comparatively definitely played a role, in RUF, in Sierra Leone. It's said that Burkina Faso leader, comparatively, helped Charles Taylor to get to power in Liberia, also teamed up with Charles Taylor to support Fode Sanko and Bukari in Sierra Leone. He did all that. And it's also said that Burkina Faso was a transit place for weapons going to Angola, to Savimbi. Hmm. And he also supplied Savimbis with diplomatic passport, so the soldiers and the personnel of Savimbi could move from place to places. But most importantly, this guy, Blaise Compaoré, I would say most importantly, this is just a part of it, is playing a key role in destabilizing Ivory Coast. You can't talk about Ivory Coast today without talking of Blaise Compaoré. Maybe we might go into that a bit more. So we have these soldiers who have played a role in also destabilizing Guinea. So he has an army that's trained to do this kind of work, and they have no respect for any other entity of their own state. They see themselves as the state in the state, you know. So, no surprise, they went to the court and ransacked the place. And I understand now their friends have been freed. You know, the soldier has been taken to court for raping an underage African girl. Hmm. Yep.
Hmm. You know, and you know what you were talking about in terms of the soldiers attacking the Justice Department and whatnot. It's interesting. It's real. Indication of real crisis of the state. You know, it reminds me of when I was in South Africa, occupied Azania last, and the police, I think it was the Metropolitan Police, they did a demonstration, and you know, demonstrating about wages or something to that effect.
Yeah.
And then the state police showed up and started shooting at them. with rubber bullets, and then the Metro Police started shooting back with real bullets. That's a real crisis for the state.
Let them neutralize each other. So we can build our own state, you know, people's state. Yeah.
So what do you anticipate may develop there in Burkina Faso from this unrest that we're seeing right now, and what is necessary to actually move the situation there forward in a good way?
Well, what is sure is that I've made a little brother from Burkina Faso. were passionate about Thomas Sankara. We need to bring this question of Revolutionary Party of workers and peasants. The African masses has to come out of control of the petit bourgeoisie, or factions of the petit bourgeoisie, the one we refer to as compradors and bureaucrats. Because what you have in most Africa, you have the petit bourgeoisie in power and the petit bourgeoisie in opposition, and both side of the petit bourgeoisie controlling the masses, controlling the struggle even. So we need to come to a situation where we have our own force, we have a political party that's able to win the people to break away from those two forces, from those two side of the African petit bourgeoisie, and then we can begin to move. And one way is, from my point of view, is to continue to do what we're doing, you know, putting the information out and making sure that the information about the ISI is out, reaches to Burkina Faso. So any force that we know is from West Africa may be in touch with the forces in Burkina Faso. We should be in touch with them, because the question of ISI, the revolutionary philosophy of the African working class, the mission of the African working class, must get into those who might be receptive in Burkina Faso, so that when they move against the African compradors and the bureaucrats, they move in a way that allow them to build at the same time also the ASI, because that's the only way. You can't just oppose both side or any side of the African petit bourgeoisie and create something that is not in touch with the ASI. We end up turning in circles, you know. So just continue what we're doing and put information out, you know. I'm sure it will reach there.
Yes. Well, you're listening to Africa Live here on WhoRadio.com. We're talking with Luwesi Kinshasa, the Secretary General of the African Socialist International. And we were talking about the situation in Burkina Faso. We're going to be getting into discussion in a little bit around the situation in Libya, where the imperialist assault continues on the people of Libya. We'll also deal with the question of what's happening in Ivory Coast right now. But we're going to go to break real quick, and when we come back, we'll go into the situation in Cote d'Ivoire, Ivory Coast. This is Akeem with the song "The Land Is Ours."
Yeah, Israeli too, E Africa. Gotta do this, man. Yeah. Yo, I gotta go, baby. Revolution in the air, baby. Yeah. For all my revolutionary people out there, drugs and sis, this young ace. Yo, let me rock you like this. Yeah. Like the Panthers did in 67. I'm about to run up in Capitol Hill with brandished weapons. Put the peace to the crackers facing. Then ask politely, can we talk about reparation? Now some may say that's rash, but my people getting played like a jackass. And when I think about it, I ain't the criminal, see you stole me. So the way I see it, you owe me. 42 years since the Birmingham bombing, and I'm still turning pages to see black churches still burning. So excuse me if I ain't interested in rituals, time to get political, yeah. You want me out the country, fine, I'll leave as soon as you get the hell out of mine. I just believe. Yeah, here I stand. Yo, John Doe about to make Americans scared like I'm the president of Iran.
Is where you to be Africa?
Yeah, the land is ours.
If they touch one, then they touch all.
Yeah, I know the truth is scary, but what you expect? I'm a revolutionary. Man, I don't want the people calm. Time to create 2-3 many Vietnams. Think I'm joking, yo, I'm serious. We gotta bring down the imperialists. The socialists is coming through. And if you on the wrong side, we coming right through you. Revolution. revolution coming soon through your way. By the way, rest in peace, Kwame Ture. There's no time to play, yo. I think somebody better tell him about the great work done by O'Malley Eshatella. Courageous fella, bringing back the soul of the body and leader of the African Socialist Party. The first brother that I heard say this phrase, all my revolutionary people help me say, come on. Is where lead to E. Fred,
yeah, the land is ours.
You touch one, then you touch all.
Come on,
is where lead to E. Fred,
yeah, the land is ours.
You touch one, then you touch all. Yo, the reason why we say that is to remember who we was from way back. The land is ours. We gonna take it back from the European powers. And I'm here to let you know, all your Uncle Tom and Aunt Jemima's gotta go. Yeah, you sold us for a black capitalism right next to slavery. That's the biggest capital prison. Once you take it for the system that enslaved you, you gotta do whatever the hell that they say do. Yeah, you black, but now you speak for whites. You want an example? Look at Condoleezza Rice. You wanna see the best of we? Then learn your history so you can change your destiny, yeah. Yo, E-Africa, you say it's where led to. Now I'm out like the Mau Mau Uhuru, yeah. Yo.
You're listening to WhoRadio.com. Voice of the International African Revolution.
Uhuru, and welcome back to Africa Live here on uhururadio.com. I'm your host, Nyabinga Zimbabwe, and we have in studio with us Louise Kinshasa, the Secretary General of the African Socialist International. And we were talking before we went to break about the situation in Burkina Faso, where there's been some unrest since last month. We want to go into discussing the situation in Ivory Coast before we begin to speak about Libya. Before we go into that, I want to let you know, all our listeners know, that you can participate in the discussion that we have here by calling in or emailing in. You can call the U.S. number, which is 727-565-1599, or you can call the U.K. number, which is 020-8133-6629, or you can call us through Skype for free anywhere in the African world. Our Skype ID is Uhuru Radio, and that's all one word, all lowercase. Or email us at dj@uhururadio.com. So, Comrade Louise, you noted that Blaise Compaoré, who's the president, the neo-colonial president in Burkina Faso, has had a role in Ivory Coast in the situation there.
Yeah.
Now, it's been a pretty intense situation in Ivory Coast, especially since the elections that happened in November. Can you tell our listeners what is happening there in Cote d'Ivoire now?
Yeah, thank you, Comrade Binga. That is an important question there, because this guy, Compaoré, has been a central in what's happening in Ivory Coast, really central. We know that the elections in November 2010 is the immediate origin of the crisis, but the crisis has a long history, starting from the crisis that began with the president Alfred Wani himself, who died in 1993. And from that time, there's been an increased instability. You can say year on year, you've seen increased instability that has matured and, in a way that we know it today. If we go to the elections in 2010, in November, we are told by the so-called international community that Alassane Ouattara won against the incumbents, which is Laurent Gbagbo. And as a result of that, the power should go to Ouattara. But at the same time, also, Gbagbo did not accept those results. He had the what we call the commission Electoral Commission, the National Electoral Commission, to declare him as the winner. So we found ourselves with two presidents, each one claiming to be the winner. And what happened very quickly, the French president of Sarkozy declared, recognized Ouattara as the president. Then we had ECOWAS, the Organization of West Africa State, also recognized Alassane as the president. And recently the UN also, I think, no, the UN at the time also recognized Ouattara. So you have the United States also. And that's basically the situation we have. And from that time, there have been, I would say, day-to-day battles between the pro-Babo forces and the pro-Ouattara forces. We must also say that despite the election that took place last year, since 2002, Ivory Coast has been split almost in two. One part, the north, controlled by what we call the army called itself Force Nouvelle, led by Guillaume Soro. But Guillaume Soro is as the face of the power that's really in the hand of Ouattara. So the north, the army in the north, is really under the leadership of Ouattara. So you have the army in the north, and at the same time, you have, at some point, you have Guillaume Soro who will make an alliance with Babo. So basically, like in Zimbabwe, you get the two sides come together and have a government of a national unity. And that was, I think, somewhere like in 2008. So you had like 2 years of a government of national unity like that, and then they went to elections, and now Ouattara is saying basically it's turned basically to be in power. What I'm trying to say here is that you have an elections, but at the same time you have the country split in two, and one half controlled by Ouattara, another part controlled by Babo. And then the election took place, and the disarmament never took place in the north, but you know, the so-called international community declared that Ouattara won the elections. And Babu has been contesting the results mostly in the north that was under the control of Ouattara. So that's basically the immediate, I would say, background. But if you go to the 90s or even before, what's the situation? In Ivory Coast, you had a situation where after the death of this man, I said before, Oufouet Boigny, in 1993, you had a man called Henri Konabédié who took power. And Henri Konabédié came with the philosophy of Ivorian, which means if you're not so-called, you know, a true Ivorian, you should not run for high office, like for the president office. And who was the target in that Ivory? Ouattara, because he's supposed to come from Burkina Faso, from the north, you see. And they had elections in 99. In that elections, basically Ouattara didn't run. And no, you know what, I didn't jump here. Before the election took place, basically, there was a coup that was made against Henri Benakodie by a soldier called Robert Gay. And Robert Gay, in his coup, he said that he's going to run power over to the civilian very quickly. But then he decided that he's going to run for office himself. And when the election took place, apparently, he did not win, but he declared himself the winner. So that's how Babo came to power. Babo said he was the winner, not the soldier. Babo, we made a coup against Henri Benakodie. So you had a situation now where Babo is in power, and Babo himself now start using the word of ivory that was used against whatever by Henri Benakodie, by Henri Konabédié. So himself, Babo, he started using it. Now the situation basically that has led us to the situation we are in today. It's our bubble campaign, you know, for a long time against the nationality of Ouattara was only true Ivorian. When finally decided to go to elections after postponing the election so many times in 2010, so we end up in the result in a situation where we are right now. So basically the question of authority has spoiled the place. The question of war in the sense that Ouattara being denied space because of authority, responded by the war, that he controlled almost half of the country. So by 2002, the country was split in half. That is an issue. Another issue also we have now, of course, is the issue of the French presence. As we're talking now, the French control the airport. Abidjan Airport. The French have a military base. It used to be called as the BIMA, B-I-M-A. And they changed that. They call that a Licorne operation. So the French and the Licorne operation are there with the troops, you know, and they're participating in, you know, in whatever is going there. And you also have the situation of the currency. Ivory Coast uses what they call CFA as a currency, the French franc. It's used in 14 countries. But the French franc is controlled by the French government. They're using an operation bank account where 65% of the CFA currency is kept in France as a guarantee to the French. Because the French basically, to prop up any government that is in power, they have to bind by that agreement. So an example basically for 100 CFA that is used by any governments in those 14 African countries to buy, let's say, oil, whatever, 65% is at all the time in a bank in France somewhere. And the French use that, of course. So if you're going to spend 100 CFA, 65 definitely comes straight from that account that the French always use all the time. So you need to put 65% of your money. Senegal, Mali, all these countries, 65% must be permanently kept in the French bank. Just imagine how many billions we're talking about.
Yeah.
So that's basically, I say, is like the background to the crisis, the, you know, parasitic relationship between Ivory Coast and France in terms of the CFA. Also the question of authority and the question of Arsenal, responded by launching a war from Burkina Faso. Because the north of Ivory Coast is with Burkina Faso, and he cannot bring soldiers in Ivory Coast without the consent of Blaise Compaoré. It's impossible. In fact, Guillaume Soro, the leader of the Force Nouvelle, brags about it. He said he is what he is because of Blaise Compaoré, and he's no shame of it, and he can't deny it. That's, I can say, that's the immediate the general background, you know, to the war. And actually, the crisis in Ivory Coast right now.
So, what impact does that have on that general region? I know that's. Hold on, before you answer that, we have a caller. Let's see, caller, you're on there. Uhuru.
Uhuru.
Yes, Uhuru.
Uhuru. Yeah, it's like Rikai calling from London.
Oh, Uhuru, Rikai.
Because I'm concerned about the situation now, because I'm reading stuff and I'm getting people sending me messages like what ASA is going to say about the Ivory Coast situation, because now we've said something about Libya. So, you know, I know the position of the ASA is always being clear with the people, but now that the French Licorne Army is... you know, more and more involved in a, you know, a clash in Abidjan. People are, you know, there's a martial day in Paris and that, so people are, you know, they want the ASA to say something about the situation, a clear position, so we can take it forward in the, on the ground here.
Okay, when you say the march taking place in Paris, is that today?
Yeah, there's a march today, there's one tomorrow, there'll be marches all over the week.
All over the week, okay.
He's getting open, like now the French army is openly killing out people there. So,
okay.
People are mobilizing in Paris. They're going to have a march today at 2 or is already gone. Then tomorrow, the whole week will be organizing marches and stuff like that. So,
okay. I really appreciate this call because we need to participate in those marches in France. That's what definitely I think we should do. But one thing is really clear. I think Africans everywhere, we should mobilize and call for the immediate withdrawal of the French troops in Ivory Coast. Lincoln, whatever name they use, they have to leave Ivory Coast. No French military bases in Africa anywhere else. That's definitely should be a demand we should put out. We also have to check the UN. We don't want the UN. The UN clearly is not on the side of African people. The UN is definitely a tool of imperialism. We can see that clearly in Ivory Coast. We can see that in the Congo. We can see that in Libya. That's for sure. We don't want the UN to be there. But what do we do ourselves? We are saying to Africans, there is no shortcut. We need to have a party of African workers in Ivory Coast, in France, wherever we are. And at our party, I will have the duty to take the masses away from the influence of the African petit bourgeoisie. Mm. It's not for us to choose between Ouattara or Babu, but for us to fight against imperialism. And if anyone who's inside the petit bourgeoisie is fighting imperialism, then we fight with them against imperialism. But at the same time, we're fighting against that petit bourgeois force when it comes to the interests of the workers. You know, so we call it basically for the Africans from Ivory Coast who are doing these demonstrations that the war against Ivory Coast is a war against Africa. So we have to mobilize enormously to win them to the understanding that Ivory Coast is just one front of a war against Africa, and that we have consciously to make that interconnection between the resistance that has to develop in Ivory Coast against the war against African Ivory Coast and against the war that's taking place in Libya, Haiti and other places against Africans by the same French imperialism, because the French imperialism is in Haiti too. So we need that unity of Africans who in France from Haiti, and there are a lot of them from Haiti in France, as there are also a lot of us from Ivory Coast and other places in France. That unity has to happen. You know, that's some of the things I can say right now. But the question of a party, we cannot do it without having the ASI as a party for all of us. We need one solution to the war against Africa, because we are one people, one African nation, but fragmented by the borders. So that's one thing we need to do, recognize those borders have to be removed so the Africans, Ivory Coast, can begin to see what the French intend to do, not just in Côte d'Ivoire, but in Burkina Faso so too, because we need the Africans in Burkina Faso and the Africans in Ivory Coast to unite against Compaoré in Burkina Faso, also against Ouattara in Ivory Coast, and also against Babo and against the French imperialism themselves in those places. Because I know if you heard what we're saying, there is definitely a development of some kind of resistance. There's a struggle developing against Compaoré. So we want those forces there and those in Ivory Coast to join up forces, to unite in one party that would develop the ASI front of West Africa. But this question of who we are, what is the nation we're trying to free, and our common approach, our unified approach against French imperialism is paramount. Only ASI can do it. And I hope we'll be able to develop probably a position paper quickly so we can take that to France, and we can take it from there. But I agree with what you said. We need definitely to clarify the war in Ivory Coast and develop ASI position and win people to ASI. Maybe we can have an ASI conference against the war, the French war against Africa in France, you know, and that might give us a place also, you know, to go forward. But yeah, I just want to say that, and I appreciate your call.
Uhuru. Thank you, Carl. I want to go ahead and take another break here. And when we come back, we're going to be talking about the situation in Libya. So stay tuned here on Africa Live on UhuruRadio.com.
Yes, we're.
Nairobi gaiye na Yohana wakiye I say inoinzi ye oh oh to the singer and the dancer and the people they rejoice ye oh oh my brother my sister only today oh oh if we could do a party ye make we the tango ye baba God na Yohana wakiye Nairobi gaiye I say no be lie, yeah. No be everybody. When sleep for night, you wake up, see the light, yeah. See the future is bright, yeah. I need the enter for I, yeah. Make you do your best, yeah. Papa God go handle the rest, yeah. Even if you no get money, they jolly they shake body. No need to get your body. If it no be God, way, last one be me dead body. Nobody be no baby. When you fall, you go stand up again. You try him again, again and again and again. Cause it's not easy, yeah. Oh, oh, oh. To the singer, the dance, and the people, they rejoice, yeah. Oh, oh, oh. My brother, my sister, know me today. Oh, oh, oh. If you could do a party, yeah, make with the tango, yeah. Baba God, now your hand working, yeah. I see my people, eh, on a good day. Nobody wake up for this world to suffer, eh. Turn a bad day. Now you come today, another man tomorrow. My brother, which kind of life with this? Everybody getting always to follow. Try, but you know easy, easy. Even if you no get money, they jolly, they shake body. No need to the dead body. If you no be God way, that's gonna be dead body. Nobody be no baby. When you fall, you go stand up again. You try him again, again and again and again. Cause it's not easy, and they dance and the people they rejoice, yeah. Oh, oh, my brother, my sister, know me today. Oh, oh, if we could do a party, yeah, make we the tango, yeah. Baba God, now your hand work, yeah, yeah, yeah. Bring it back.
Yeah. took a trip to Paris. I saw the Eiffel Tower. I flew to Honolulu. It's a South Pacific flower. I traveled way to Burma, all across the Bay of Bengal. I went to old Malaya. What a perfect locale. Traveled here and yonder, and I never found a home. I guess it must be written all my life to roam. There's a land of milk and honey on the river they call the Nile, and every day is bright and sunny.
Africa Live here on TheHooRadio.com. I'm your host, Nyabinga Zimbabwe, and you were listening to Abby Lincoln with Africa. And before that, we played P Square's Inoy Easy. I know Africans out of West Africa are feeling that first one. So we've been talking in studio with Luwazi Kinshasa, the Secretary General of the African Socialist International, about the situation in Africa. It seems like things are popping off all over the place. We were talking about Burkina Faso, where there is unrest there. We were just talking about the situation in Ivory Coast, where you know, following the elections there, and really long before the elections of November, this last November. The situation has been intense there in Cote d'Ivoire, Ivory Coast, and we want to talk now about the situation in Libya, where the imperialist assault on Libya continues, and in fact, I know it seems like folks really missed this the other day when Obama basically alluded to them lynching Gaddafi, them planning to lynch Gaddafi, when he said in his speech that the noose was tightening around Gaddafi's neck. But we're gonna we want to talk about the situation in Libya now. And Luwazi, we talked a couple of weeks ago, I think it was, about the situation in Libya. Can you just to you know, give folks who weren't listening the week before last, just a brief sense of what it is that mm-hmm. is happening in Libya.
Mm-hmm. The situation in Libya is just part of the war against Africa by imperialism. We've been told for weeks by the press that tells lies and lies and lies that imperialism, United States-led imperialism, were going to Libya to save the people of Libya. We all knew, at least in our movement, we always knew it's a lie because there is no way, the U.S. imperialism that support funds the Israel settler state that bombs, as we're talking, the people from Palestine day and night. The United States that invaded Iraq and killed a million people there. The United States that invaded Afghanistan will go to Libya and save the people. You know it's a lie. France, we just talked about France just now. France that has been fighting for its own survival in Côte d'Ivoire, you know, because in the competition with the U.S. and Ivory Coast, and then now with China, France, they're doing whatever they can to stay in Ivory Coast, you know, to stay in Ivory Coast, to control the economy of Ivory Coast, you know, and they have been funding the war in Ivory Coast, you know, and basically they've been killing Africans in Ivory Coast, and you will believe those French, the one who devalued it by 100%, the CFA currency in 1993, overnight, in West Africa, will go in Libya and save our people? Of course, no. Definitely not. You know, and we just want to say, we want people to be clear that basically in Libya, what we have is a colonial invasion. It's a colonial aggression. And it's being done partly as a part of the U.S. response to what's been going on in North Africa, in Egypt, Tunisia, Yemen, other places. I want to say U.S. response because the U.S. is losing. You know, the U.S. is losing. The U.S. imperialism is on decline. They're losing influence. And they're losing influence against who? Against countries like China, against countries like Iran, like the Middle East, in particular against Iran. You know, so it means that all these people mobilization that took place in Egypt and Tunisia in particular are making it difficult for the United States to have its own way because the people are being mobilized and the United States is scared of the people being mobilized because the people's power is what the United States or imperialists are scared of. Because the people's power is always projected one way or the other, their own program, their own leadership, that's independent from imperialism power. So they're going to Libya basically to respond to that, to restore the loss of influence that is happening right now as we're talking. That's why they've gone to Libya. But they're also going to Libya because there's oil in Libya. You know, and they're going there to seize the asset of Libya. The oil of Libya. They've gone there to bring down the power of the influence of Gaddafi. We know Gaddafi has invested massively throughout Africa. We're talking about something like 30 billion. You know, we know he's in Uganda, he's in other places in Africa, different countries in Africa. Gaddafi has invested. The first satellite that was sent in space that facilitated transmission, communication throughout Africa, was funded by the Libyan state under the leadership of Gaddafi. So Gaddafi has his own influence in Africa. And also Gaddafi is an anti-Zionist. You know, he's a consistent anti-Zionist. We've been saying that for some time. And being that, we know that the settler state of Israel cannot stand, cannot exist with the collaboration of neo-colonial Arab regimes, and also, of course, without the support of the United States. And the power of an organization like Hamas, Hezbollah, and the mobilization taking place in the Middle East, and the growing influence of Iran, the growing influence of Gaddafi, all these contribute to the shift of power, shift of balance of power in the region. And the U.S. have also responded to that. That's what we're looking at. That they're going to save Libya from Gaddafi. It's a lie. Have you seen any mass massacres by Gaddafi on the television? I'm not saying Gaddafi is no an oppressor or a dictator, you know, but it cannot be compared to United States government that has been oppressing Africans in this country for 500 years, that has locked up at least 2 million Africans in jails, that has wiped out the indigenous population, you know, that is responsible for biological warfare against Africa in terms of AIDS and Ebola and other diseases. You know, it cannot be compared with United States. You know, we just want to say that as a general background, that it's not a war to save Africa, to rescue the people from Libya, is a war to end the influence of the people struggle that's taking place in the Middle East and in North Africa, also to end the influence of Muammar Gaddafi, and of course to seize the oil of Libya. Is a war definitely against Africa, and I can say that because this is the first war that being coordinated by AFRICOM, which is based in Djibouti. You know, Africa, the United States military command to respond in a strategic way in its battle for hegemonic control of African wealth and minerals at the expense of China in particular, may also maybe other imperialists, but particularly at the contend with China. So that's one thing definitely we can say in terms of what's happening in Libya right now.
Now, we want to, first of all, let our listeners know again that you can participate in this discussion that we're having right now. You can call in or email in. You can call the U.S. number, which is 727-565-1599, or you can call the U.K. number, which is 020-8133-6629. Or you can call us through Skype for free anywhere in the African world. Our Skype ID is Uhuru Radio, and it's all one word, all lowercase. Or email us at dj@uhururadio.com. Now, Luwazi, since last we talked on this show about Libya, information has come out that the CIA was in Libya before this attack. Can you say something about that?
That's for sure. That's for sure. The CIA is on the ground because the information they've been telling us so far that the rebels' forces are fighting against Gaddafi, we know it's a lie. We all know whatever they're showing us on the TV, they are not organized, ragtag army, as they're calling it. So they have to be other forces on the ground doing the work for them. So, no surprise that the CIA is there, or similar type organization to the CIA also must be there. The French one, we all know the British were there before even the UN gives them the so-called mandate to go there. The British commando have been there already, so the CIA have been there long. The French too. No surprise that the chairman often said that the Israel also are there on the ground. You know, so no surprise. And this is even another proof to show to the people who are listening that it's not a war to save the people of Libya. The CIA is not about to save the oppressed people. The CIA is an organization to assassinate those who oppose to the United States ruling class control over the resources. So the CIA is not a democratic organization. The CIA is a terrorist organization. That's what they do. That's what they've been trained for.
Mm-hmm.
So wherever you see the CIA, you know it's no just war. You know it's unjust war. You know, it's a terrorist war. That's what the CIA is.
Mm.
So that's what we're looking at. So it exposed Obama for what he is. He's a CIA man.
Yeah. In addition, we've also learned that the guy who's apparently the top military commander for the so-called Libyan rebels is someone who has ties to the CIA. Khalifa Hifter is someone who has spent, I think, what is the last 20 years living in Virginia?
Yes.
Can you say something about this guy?
That's the former general in the Libyan army that's been exiled in the United States.
Mm.
He's not the only one. There's another guy who also has been a professor in the U.S. It's Taruni. He's been there for 30 years. He's gone back to Libya to be the organizer. So you go Taruni, you go the Khalifa you just mentioned, and you have other forces who are also defecting from Gaddafi, like the Kusa Musa. So you can see, let's just stick to at the general and the guy Charuni, who has been here for 30 years. These two guys have no connection to the people. They were not organizing anything on the ground. You can see the CIA, the United States government, Obama has pulled them on the top as the face, the Libyan face of the assault of Libya. So this really informs us a lot. It's similar to Yalabi in Iraq. You know, the United States brought somebody after 30 years believing in the U.S. where he wasn't organizing nobody in Iraq. So he's going to be outside Iraq, but organizing on the ground. You know, but he wasn't organizing nobody. Nobody knew him. He wasn't on any force. And he's also providing the information to Bush, validating what Bush was saying when the guy was just a crook like any crook the CIA works for. So these guys, Kalash and Charuni, they're just U.S. puppets, and that's the people the U.S. Intend to use to justify, to give some kind of legitimacy to say they are Libyans, you know, to cover up for what they are, for they're doing, you know. So we are just opposed to this war. We are just opposite, and we're calling everyone who's listening to unite with us to defend the Libya, to unite with Gaddafi against imperialism. Because that's what I'll be able to say, because this is imperialist aggression. How can you have the US, France, Sweden, British, the whole NATO fighting against one army of Gaddafi? They have imposed sanctions, you know, on Libya. It's not even a war, because Gaddafi doesn't have the mighty army like the U.S. have, or Britain have, or France has. And they expose also imperialism for what it really is. You know, when Mao used to say he's a paper tiger, I mean, what kind of power is this to go and fight one small country? It's not even a major power in the world. That's not even manufacture all the weapons that's supposed to be a weapon of mass destruction or the most modern, sophisticated weapons in the world you can find. And to go and fight against that kind of army. You know. So it shows the despair imperialism is under. Because to have all the biggest bullies in the block to go and fight one person, those bullies must be despair. So imperialism isn't a bad state. It's a profound statement. I can understand if they all gang up to go and fight China. Mm-hmm. It's a big nation, big army, big economy. But a country of 6 million people, that's what Libya is, 6 million people. Now, United States, 314-something million people. Britain, 66 million people. France, equivalent, 66 million people. And you add Italy, Denmark, Sweden, and other countries in the NATO, Poland, all these countries you have, you're talking about, I think, 700 million people that make up all those countries against a country of 6 million people. What kind of war is that? So that's imperialism in decline. They're losing. That's desperate to survive, desperate you know, to hang on. So that's what that kind of imperialism are looking on, you know. So that's all. Those of us who are involved in this work to organize for ASI, and those who are listening, this is the time for us to reach out to all Africans who are listening. We need to mobilize, because what needs to happen is that the crisis must be deepened because of what we do, as opposed to what others are doing. You know, that's what is missing. The crisis must deepen because all of us are involved in the struggle and the leadership of ASI and, you know, kicking the battle for imperialism. Then we can say the crisis is what we causing hate to be, basically. And that's what is missing, you know. And that's what we're calling those who are listening, basically, to join us in this struggle.
World. So we're going to take a break here on Africa Live, and when we come back, we'll continue our discussion on what's happening in Africa. So stay tuned here on AhuRadio.com.
Now we know that the American dream is something that everybody in this country wants a part of, and we recognize that we can experience it at the expense of most of the black people
when America dreams is an African nightmare. Stolen goods like gold, diamonds, cold hand right here. Slavery and misery, that's my family's plight here. When America dreams, it's an African nightmare. When America dreams, it's an African nightmare. Stolen goods like gold, diamonds, cold hand right here. Slavery and misery, that's my family's plight here. When America dreams, it's an African nightmare. We in two different worlds connected. A relationship where you take and I'm supposed to accept it. Everything you got you stole from diamonds or the gold. You're scared with no, so your police protected. Let's get real. Adding American to the end of my name's just game. That don't make me free. A million and a half of mine locked on prison blocks and cops popping shots my way. Help me see, so let me be. I ain't asked to be your slave or your citizen. Got a black man as your president, but it hasn't meant no change in our conditions. Africans, listen. Can't get no change from hopes and wishing. Let's get power. Independence is the mission. So when this ends, wake your brains. Break the chains. Shake this game and take the reins. Let's make our aim. One Africa, one nation. We ain't playing. Raise up and make this struggle if you hear what I'm saying. When America dreams, it's an African nightmare. Stolen goods like gold, diamonds, cold hand right here. Slavery and misery, that's my family's plight here. When America dreams, it's an African nightmare. When America dreams, it's an African nightmare. Stolen goods like gold, diamonds, cold hand right here. Slavery and misery, that's my family's plight here. When America dreams, it's an African nightmare. Man, I cringe every time I hear y'all call me African American. Africans suffer from American terror, man. Don't tell me about no damn Taliban on my block. Osama ain't bombing his Uncle Sam. The U.S. government, see, we didn't figure your deal. Thieves get violent, that's how they protect what they steal. But you can kick, spit, swing, bite, fight, and cuss. But just trust, we coming for all that belongs to us. So you can call Barack Obama or Nelson Mandela, all them handpicked fellas. Your mans can't tell us what's up. Your time is up and we done peeped your scene. White power's dying and we about to end your scream. So send your team back to the lab, cause we ain't having it. And if you for us, see no system built off our backs at last. We get one Africa, one nation in our hands. Divorce the system, man, and understand we African. Dreams, it's an African nightmare. Stolen goods like gold, diamonds, cold hand right here. Slavery and misery, that's my family's plight here. When America dreams, it's an African nightmare. When America dreams, it's an African nightmare. Stolen goods like gold, diamonds, cold hand right here. Slavery and misery, that's my family's plight here. When America dreams, it's an African nightmare. When America dreams, and when America dreams, y'all. America dreams, and when America dreams, y'all. America dreams, and when America dreams, it's an African nightmare. It's an African nightmare. When America dreams, and when America dreams, y'all. America dreams, and when America dreams, y'all. America dreams, and when America dreams, it's an African nightmare. It's an African nightmare.
Yeah, I heard, you know, I heard some of you guys out there calling me black, but I want you to know something. There ain't no black America. There ain't no white America. There's just one America that's living off the back of the rest of the world, and doggone it, I want to be a part of it.
But sir, isn't this system parasitic and living off the backs of black people everywhere?
Well, yeah, it's parasitic, but that's part of the American dream. And, you know, look at me. You know, now you can be black and, you know, a few of us can be part of it. I'm with it. White power.
Tune into Caribbean Forum with me, Ron Bob Semple, every Saturday morning from 9 to 11 a.m. on the Uhuru Radio Network. We examine issues that affect Caribbean and Caribbean American nationals, both at home and across the diaspora. If you're not listening to Caribbean Forum with me, Ron Bob Semple, here on the Uhuru Radio Network, then your radio is not on.
Thank you. Delaware, oh Milo Malo. If you want go wash, now what are you going to use? Toba Fesebe, oh Milo Malo. If you want cook soup, now what are you going to use? Tori Bangbo now, oh Milera. If your head is hot, now what are you going to use? Tomobandagba, oh Milo Malo. If your child is grow, now what are him going to use? If water kill your child, now what are you going to use?
Fela Kuti's Water No Get Enemy, a classic song. You're listening to Africa Live here on TheWhoRadio.com. I'm your host, Nyabinga Zimbabwe, and we are in studio live with Luwesi Kinshasa, Secretary General of the African Socialist International. And we've been talking about the situation in Africa. We began speaking about Burkina Faso, where there's been unrest for a little while now, at least a month. And we also talked about the crisis in Ivory Coast following the elections there, and we're talking now about the situation in Libya. Luwesi, just to get back to that, one of the things that that we know happened not long ago was that Libya paid to get sanctions dropped. Against Libya. The U.S. Had sanctions going on against Libya, and Gaddafi paid money to get that removed. And as I understand, Gaddafi was making a demand for those resources back. Do you think that that may also be a factor in what's happening now in Libya?
Yeah. There's a possibility, because we know definitely Gaddafi first, you know, he was bombed by Reagan, you know, in 1986. Also, we know also Gaddafi, after the Lockerbie bombing that took place over the British soil over Scotland, I think it was 86, you know, 89, I think it was, Gaddafi was accused of causing it. And although there has never been really evidence, we saw families of Lockerbie bombing who followed the trial. Many were not satisfied with the conclusion. But there was a sanction that was imposed on Gaddafi. That's a long, many years of sanction. We're talking about, you know, something like almost 12 years of sanction. And we know that Gaddafi, to come out of those sanctions, was forced to pay compensation to the families of Lockerbie bombing victims. And there is a report coming from the Russian TV, I think it could be a U.S.-based journalist, who basically saying that Gaddafi has been putting pressure on the on the U.S. Oil companies to pay him back the money that he paid as a compensation to the victims of Lockerbie bombing, because it has nothing to do with him, you know. He just paid that money to get out of the sanctions. So 12 years of sanctions, that's a hell of it. That's many years, you know. So, and as a result of that pressure Gaddafi was putting in the United States, in October, Chevron Oil Company withdrew from Libya. And you can see from October of last year until February, until March in particular, when the bombing started, we can see definitely there is a shift in attitude of the United States, because Gaddafi thought that is back in the so-called international community, he can do business with imperialism. As often the chairman said, just like Saddam Hussein, Gaddafi didn't believe he would be attacked. So he was not preparing for that. But the U.S. being what it is, they don't care about the people in Libya. They don't care about the oppressed people or oppressed nations. They do what they can do. Might is right. And the U.S. response basically partly has been what we see. So the question of Gaddafi claiming back this money could also be a factor. We see how the news developed, but it's already out there.
One thing we see also, generally speaking, is that the media, is right in line with the U.S. interest. Media in general, generally, if the U.S. says that Gaddafi is a bad guy, the media says Gaddafi is the bad guy. Yeah. If the U.S. says, Gaddafi needs to be removed, then the media says Gaddafi needs to be removed, in a lot of cases, you had Al Jazeera, though, being a force that, that you can kind of find better information from that's not so, pro-U.S. In this particular situation, though, it's been a bit different. The Al Jazeera website seems to be towing the U.S. line. Do you know why that is?
Well, it's very interesting that you ask this question, because before even the bombing started, Al Jazeera is known for being anti-Gaddafi. He didn't cover the news in a way they covered what happened in Egypt. But since the bombing of Libya, we know one thing's happening now, that Qatar has been given the right to sell Libyan oil. That's something we know for sure. We also know that Qatar has been also given the right to supply Libyan parts that is under control of imperialism with medical supplies, foods, clothes, all this basic stuff, Qatar would benefit. And we know Al Jazeera is owned by a Qatari, by a member of the ruling class of Qatar. So we can say definitely there is a relationship between the aggression of Libya, the silence of Al Jazeera on the atrocities happening in Libya, and also the contracts that the Qataris are being given that will make a lot of money in Libya. There is definitely a relationship. That's what we always said. The news is not neutral. The news also portray the interests of the ruling class. Al Jazeera, no matter how people think it's cool, or no matter how people say, he can give more information than the Fox News, or the Wolf News. You got Wolf News? I'm joking. That's issue, they represent the view of the ruling class. So in this case, Al Jazeera represent the view of the ruling class in Qatar and in the Middle East and Arab regimes in general. So it's not an interest to portray news that will expose the Qatari ruling class or imperialism ruling class when it comes to Libya. That's why it's difficult to find news about the massacres that's caused by the bombing of the United States of Libya. Because just imagine, over 200 Tomahawks missiles. That's deadly.
Yeah.
And you have French airplanes, British airplanes, you name it. They're not bombing the sand in the desert. They're bombing buildings with people. So they're killing thousands and thousands of people. And there's no single, pictures of it. They can show you the rebels doing this and that. They can show us satellite images of tsunami, all these places. But they can't show us satellite images of the bombing they have made. So there is no truth whatsoever with imperialism news. It's just lies, and deceit. That's why we need to build our own news. And this is really critical in a period like this, where you find the truth. So I'm calling in the people who are listening here, who have skills, We can make news, you know, we should join the Uhuru news team so we can be able to project, you know, speak the truth, because that's part of the solution to the problems of humanity, speaking the truth. And that's what Uhuru news is, the truth of the oppressed, you know. So I really appreciate all the time of being here so I can speak the truth with Uhuru news.
Yes. So, you know, you speak about the bombings and how, you know, it's been, you know, killing civilians. And I saw a report, I guess it was on yesterday, where NATO was talking about having bombed a city that the rebels had claimed victory in. And so they were basically also bombing rebels, you know. You know about that situation?
I'm telling you, you know, they don't care. I'm even sure U.S. airplane or French plane, whoever, that were in those planes, they knew the people down were Arab people, so-called rebels, and they bombed them anyway. I would not be surprised. They don't care. Only thing that matters for them is what they get for themselves. They don't care about the oppressed. You know, you can work with them today. When they don't need you, they'll put you aside, you know. Mm-hmm. So those rebels, they're just getting some good lessons from U.S. imperialism. But fortunately, they will not listen. They will not hear. So it has to take a real struggle, you know, how to push them out.
Yeah.
Yes, sir.
Yeah. So we want to get ready to close this portion of the program, but I want to ask, go ahead, you have something you want to, go ahead.
There is also one more point, you know, we are told now NATO is taking over.
Yeah.
You know, and NATO, I didn't know NATO was an international community, so we're all white now. NATO is a white power institution, you know. They are bandits, criminals, you know, forces to genocide, you know. And now they are in charge of a command. And he basically just exposed the UN terribly. That the UN mandate, which is a legitimate mandate, because we already know the Security Council does not represent the international community, you know. And even the people who voted in the Security Council represent minority of humanity. If you add up, you know, population of the countries we voted for war, you know, U.S., France, and Britain, South Africa, Nigeria, and it could be a country in the Middle East, because India and China abstained. So it's a minority vote in the first place. And now the NATO is carrying out operations on the behalf of humanity, international community. That's a lie. So from one lie to the next. So lies, lies, lies. So people should not believe anything's coming out of UN, the US and the French press and all that, because it's an unjust war. It's an imperialist war, not different from the war that they made against indigenous people of America to steal the land. It's not different from the war the French made against Algeria to prevent Algeria being independent. It's no different from the war that they imposed in the Congo in the last 14 years to kill 5 million people, at least. It's no different. They are all the same wars of genocide for power over colonized people and a war to maintain control of our resources. And only way we can do is get organized so Africa can speak with power. And we need to respond to all these wars by basically getting in touch with the ASI, because that is the only future we have. If Africa is going to have to play a role, if Africa is going to develop a power out of this crisis, it's going to be a revolutionary power. And the only plan that we have seen that exists that makes sense out there is the ASI plan, the African plan. That's what the ASI is. So I'm just calling brothers and sisters and comrades listening, African patriots who are there. Time like this is a time where history is being made. And just get in touch with our ASI so we can play our part in basically defeating imperialist power in many before me, in my camp, in a black face, in a NATO face, or African face, whatever face it can come. So that's just what I want to say, basically, in closing, in this section of war against Libya, that the United States will not win Libya. Imperialists cannot win in Africa, and there will no win against the oppressed people. That's just objective reality. That's what's happening. You know, they're losing.
War. All right, we're going to take a break here, and when we come back, we're going to talk briefly about the situation, about the assassination of Martin Luther King, and why the U.S. government assassinated him. So stick with us here on Africa Live, here on AhuraRadio.com.
Attack you at the Capitol. Run up in your palace, find a head to stay to crack a few. Get a taste of power, then they become fascists too. The fiscal conservatives don't know what their purpose is. Spend money on the war, then they cut your goods and services. Murderous corporate monsters is breaking records. Exoners at $40 billion a year, they raking in record profits. Stop it. How they banking while the auto industry is tanking? Leadership is sinking, up pollution in the water stanking. Loyalty to petroleum royalty spoil the economy. We won't get it popping till we oil free. If your oil rich, then we invaded. They call it occupation, but we losing jobs across the nation. Drill, baby, drill, while they make our soldiers kill, baby, still. The desert where the blood and oil spill.
This is the ballad of the black gold. They call it Texas tea, but it's bigger than a cowboy with a lasso. It's deeper than a black hole. Create monopolies, except they collect a fee when your past go. Crisis international. The government, the facto. We got no control of this fiasco. Darker than the back roads. Bubble hotter than Tabasco. More than what you bargain for.
Nigeria is celebrating 50 years of independence. They still feel the colonial effects of Great Britain's presence. Dictators quick to imitate the West. Got in bed with oil companies and now to place a mess. Take a guess which ones came and violated. They oiled up the soil. The Ogoni people was almost annihilated. But still, they never stayed silent. There was activists and poets using nonviolent tactics that was catalyst for soldiers to break into their crib. Take them from the kids and try to break them like a twig. And make examples of the leaders executed Sarah Weaver. Threw Fela's mom out the window right after they beat her. In an effort to defeat hope, now the people feet soaked in oil. So the youth is doing drive-bys and speed boats. They kidnap the workers, they're blowing up the pipelines. You see the fires glowing in the nighttime. Yeah.
This is the ballad of the black gold. They call it Texas tea, but it's bigger than a cowboy with a lasso. It's deeper than a black hole. Create monopolies, except they collect a fee when your past go. Crisis international. The government de facto. We got no control of this fiasco. Darker than the back roads. Bubble hotter than Tabasco. More than what you bargain for.
History, a slippery creature. It's full of plot twists and surprise endings like a mystery feature. This oil is slicking and preachers. It make the problems in the region amplified like victory speeches. Poison the water, lead the boys to the slaughter. Go in somebody country, rearrange the order and destroy the borders. You see him dancing through the field of fire. World domination, the real desire. The devil is still a liar.
This is the ballad of the black gold. They call it Texas tea, but it's bigger than a cowboy with a lasso. It's deeper than a black hole. Create monopolies, except they collect your fee when your past go. Crisis international. The government de facto. We got no control of this fiasco. Darker than the back roads. Bubble hotter than Tabasco. More than what you bargained for.
Oh.
black gold. They call it Texas tea, but it's bigger than a cowboy with a lasso. It's deeper than a black hole. Create monopolies, except they collect a fee when you pass go. Crisis international. The government de facto. We got no control of this fiasco. Darker than the back roads. Bubble hotter than Tabasco. More than what you bargain for, asphalt.
Woo, and welcome back to Africa Live here on AhuaRadio.com. I'm your host, Nyabinga Zimbabwe. And we want to just take a moment to look back at the assassination of Martin Luther King. You know, we every year there's these great celebrations, parades, you know, a lot of people get the day off in January on the anniversary of Martin Luther King's birthday. Of course, they don't say anything about, you know, his assassination. You know, it's a general silence around that. And just want to say a little something about Martin Luther King's assassination and the situation in that. Of course, the FBI had a program, the counterintelligence program. I say had, but the reality is that it's not something that's past tense. It continues even to this day. But in a memo around the counterintelligence program that the FBI was coordinating, there was a memo around black nationalist groups, and that put out the objectives of the FBI's COINTELPRO program, and it named a number of things. One was to prevent a coalition of militant black nationalist groups. It said it was setting out to prevent the rise of a messiah who could unify and electrify the militant nationalist movement. And it named a number of other things, and part of it was discrediting in general, destroying black nationalist groups and leaders. It named a few people who it saw as possible, you know, forces who could unify and electrify this movement, who could be, quote, the black messiah that they were talking about. And they named a number of folks, one of which was Martin Luther King. And in the memo, it said that Martin Luther King, if he were to abandon his the white liberal nonviolent philosophy, then he would become a threat. Martin Luther King was assassinated in 1968. And in 1968, there was a real changing situation on the ground in the U.S. Where the so-called movement for civil rights was flipping, where the African masses began to change objectives, where the African working class began to take the lead, and the demand went beyond a demand for civil rights, but for one for black power. And while a lot of African middle class leaders who were leaders in the civil rights movement were not able to make the leap, were being left behind by history, Martin Luther King was one who was fairly aware of that, and was attempting not to be left behind by history. And so in this changing situation, Martin Luther King himself began to change, the positions that he's had, and also began to be led by the African workers as opposed to leading the African workers. It was a situation where King and the SCLC would call demonstrations and call African masses out. Of course, when Martin Luther King was killed, he was killed in a situation where he was called out by garbage workers, by sanitation workers, who called him, said, "We're having this demonstration. You need to come on out and say something." And not only that, there's a speech where that I'm going to play some of here before we close the program out, where Martin Luther King openly talks about questioning whether he can continue to call for nonviolence in the response by African masses to the situation in the U.S., to oppression in the U.S., as the U.S. was committing such great violence in Vietnam. And so this was a presentation he had made at Ebenezer Baptist Church on April 30th, 1967. Of course, on April 4th, 1968, not even a year later, Martin Luther King was assassinated. And so, you know, it's clear, you know, we know, despite, you know, any thing that the U.S. government says, you know, about some white man in the bathroom killing Martin Luther King somewhere, we know that that it was the FBI that killed Martin Luther King, that it was the COINTELPRO operation that had already identified King as a possible problem if he were to abandon this philosophical nonviolence, which he was questioning then. We already know that that the FBI had set out to neutralize King, and so I just wanted to state that clearly. You know, we know FBI killed King, yeah. And they killed King because they don't want anybody representing the African masses in the interest of the African masses. Required, as they do today, a situation where Africans are willing subjects, willing oppressed peoples, you know, to be exploited by this imperialist system. And so I just wanted to say that, and I want to play some of the speech, because we always get to hear every year, you know, I Have a Dream speech, even if you don't want to hear it. And but we rarely get the opportunity to hear King's speech on Vietnam and his opposition to Vietnam. And so I want to play some of this speech here. So this is Martin Luther King on April 30th, 1967, in the speech where he raises this question of whether he can continue to you know, call for nonviolence in the face of the U.S.'s violence against the people of Vietnam.
The time has come for America to hear the truth about this tragic war. Now, I've chosen to preach about the war in Vietnam today because I agree with Dante that the hottest places in hell are reserved for those who, in a period of moral crisis, maintain their neutrality. There comes a time when silence is betrayal. The truth of these words is beyond doubt. But the mission to which they call us is a most difficult one. Even when pressed by the demands of inner truth, men do not easily assume the task of opposing their government's policy, especially in time of war. Nor does a human spirit move without great difficulty against all the apathy of conformist thought within one's own bosom. There has never been such a monumental dissent during a war by the American people. Polls reveal that almost 15 million Americans explicitly oppose the war in Vietnam. Additional millions cannot bring themselves around to support it. This reveals that millions have chosen to move beyond the prophesying of smooth patriotism to the high grounds of firm dissent based upon the mandates of conscience and the reading of history. Now, of course, one of the difficulties in speaking out today grows out of the fact that there are those who are seeking to equate dissent with disloyalty. It's a dark day in our nation when high-level authorities will seek to use every method to silence dissent. Something is happening and people are not going to be silent. The truth must be told. And I say that those who are seeking to make it appear that anyone who opposes the war in Vietnam is a fool or a traitor or an enemy of our soldiers is a person who has taken a stand against the best in our tradition. Many persons have questioned me about the wisdom of my path. Why are you speaking about the war, Dr. King? Why are you joining the voices of dissent? Peace and civil rights don't mix, they say. And so this morning I speak to you on this issue because I am determined to take the gospel seriously. There is at the outset a very obvious an almost facile connection between the war in Vietnam and the struggle I and others have been waging in America. A few years ago, there was a shining moment in that struggle. It seemed as if there was a real promise of hope for the poor, both black and white, through the poverty program. Then came the build-up in Vietnam, and I watched the program broken as if it was some idle political plaything of a society gone mad on war. And I knew that America would never invest the necessary funds or energies in rehabilitation of its poor so long as adventures like Vietnam continued to draw men and skills and money like some demonic destructive suction tube. And you may not know it, my friends, but it is estimated that we spend $500,000 to kill each enemy soldier while we spend only $53 for each person classified as poor. And much of that $53 goes for salaries to people who are not poor. And so I was increasingly compelled to see the war as an enemy of the poor and attack it as such. Perhaps the more tragic recognition of reality took place when it became clear to me that the war was doing far more than devastating the hopes of the poor at home. It was sending their sons and their brothers and their husbands to fight and die in extraordinarily high proportions relative to the rest of the population. We were taking the black young men who had been crippled by society and sending them 8,000 miles away to guarantee liberties in Southeast Asia, which they had not found in Southwest Georgia and East Harlem. So we have been repeatedly faced with the cruel irony of watching Negro and white boys on TV screens as they kill and die together for a nation that has been unable to seat them together in the same schoolroom. So we watch them in brutal solidarity burning the huts of a poor village. But we realize that they would hardly live on the same block in Chicago or Atlanta. As I have walked among the desperate, rejected, and angry young men, I have told them that Molotov cocktails and rifles would not solve their problems. But they ask, and rightly so, what about Vietnam? They ask if our own nation wasn't using massive doses of violence to solve its problems. And I knew that I could never again raise my voice against the violence of the oppressed in the ghettos without having first spoken clearly to the greatest purveyor of violence in the world today, my own government. America and most of its newspapers applauded me in Montgomery. And I stood before thousands of Negroes getting ready to riot when my home was bombed and said, "We can't do it this way." They applauded us in the sit-in movement. We nonviolently decided to sit in at lunch counters. They applauded us on the freedom rides when we accepted blows without retaliation. Oh, the press was so noble in its applause and so noble in its praise when I was saying, "Be nonviolent toward Bull Connor." There's something strangely inconsistent about a nation and a press that will praise you when you say, "Be nonviolent toward Jim Clark," but will curse and damn you when you say, "Be nonviolent toward little brown Vietnamese children." There's something wrong with that press. Another burden of responsibility was placed upon me in 1964. And I cannot forget that the Nobel Peace Prize was not just something taking place, but it was a commission to work harder than I had ever worked before for the brotherhood of man. This is a calling that takes me beyond national allegiances, but even if it were not present, I would yet have to live with the meaning of my commitment to the ministry of Jesus Christ. To me, the relationship of this ministry to the making of peace is so obvious that I sometimes marvel at those who ask me why I am speaking against the war. Could it be that they do not know that the good news was meant for all men, for communists and capitalists, for their children and ours, for black and white, for revolutionary and conservative? Have they forgotten that my ministry is in obedience to the one who loved his enemies so fully that he died for them? What then can I say to the Viet Cong or to Castro or to Mao as a faithful minister to Jesus Christ? Can I threaten them with death? Or must I not share with them my life? There will be no meaningful solution until some attempt is made to know these people and hear their broken cries. And who are we supporting in Vietnam today? It's a man by the name of General Key, who fought with the French against his own people, and who said on one occasion that the greatest hero of his life is Hitler. This is who we are supporting in Vietnam today. Oh, our government and the press generally won't tell us these things, But God told me to tell you this morning, the truth must be told. And all the while the people read our leaflets and received regular promises of peace and democracy and land reform. Now they languish under our bombs and consider us not their fellow Vietnamese, the real enemy. They see the children degraded by our soldiers as they beg for food. We have destroyed their two most cherished institutions, the family and the village. We have destroyed their land and their crops. This is a role our nation has taken, the role of those who make peaceful revolutions impossible by refusing to give up the privileges and the pleasures that comes from the immense profits of overseas investment. Now, I'm convinced that if we are to get on the right side of the world revolution, we as a nation must undergo a radical revolution of values. We must rapidly begin to shift from a thing-oriented society to a person-oriented society. When machines and computers, profit motives and property rights are considered more important than people, the giant triplets of racism, militarism, and economic exploitation are incapable of being conquered. A true revolution of values will soon cause us to question the fairness and justice of many of our present policies. True compassion is more than flinging a coin to a beggar. A true revolution of values will soon look uneasily on the glaring contrast of poverty and wealth with righteous indignation. It will look across the seas and see individual capitalists of the West investing huge sums of money in Asia, Africa, and South America, only to take the profits out with no concern for the social betterment of the countries, and say this is not just. It will look at our alliance with the landed gentry of Latin America and say this is not just. The Western arrogance of feeling that it has everything to teach others and nothing to learn from them is not just. A true revolution of values will lay hands on the world order and say of war, this way of settling differences is not just. This business of burning human beings with napalm, of filling our nation's homes and with orphans and widows, of injecting poisonous drugs of hate into the veins of peoples normally humane, of sending men home from dark and bloody battlefields, physically handicapped and psychologically deranged, cannot be reconciled with wisdom, justice, and love. A nation that continues year after year to spend more money on military defense than on programs of social uplift is approaching spiritual death. And it is a sad fact that because of comfort, complacency, a morbid fear of communism, our proneness to adjust to injustice, the Western nations that initiated so much of the revolutionary spirit of the modern world have now become the arch anti-revolutionaries. And our only hope today lies in our ability to recapture the revolutionary spirit and go out into a sometimes hostile world, declaring eternal hostility to poverty, racism, and militarism. A genuine revolution of values means, in the final analysis, that our loyalties must become ecumenical rather than sectional. Every nation must now develop an overriding loyalty to mankind as a whole in order to preserve the best in their individual societies. This calls for a worldwide fellowship that lifts neighborly concern beyond one's tribe, race, class, and nation, is in reality a call for an all-embracing, unconditional love for all men. This oft-misunderstood and misinterpreted concept, so readily dismissed by the Nietzsches of the world as a weak and cowardly force, has now become an absolute necessity for the survival of mankind. Let me say finally that I oppose the war in Vietnam because I love America. I speak out against this war, not in anger, but with anxiety and sorrow in my heart, and above all with a passionate desire to see our beloved country stand as the moral example of the world. I speak out against this war because I'm disappointed with America. And there can be no great disappointment where there is no great love. I'm disappointed with our failure to deal positively and forthrightly with the triple evils of racism, economic exploitation, and militarism. We are presently moving down a dead-end road that can lead to national disaster. America has...
I heard a young boy say, no, 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 my dad's not here today.